Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
It would be appropriate if his 100th putt this week dropped a birdie.
What a finish for McIlroy.
Gentili goes down, and this is one very tough lady from Italy. Been 10 rounds a couple of times. Can't cope with Katie Taylor.
Sunshine, 106.8. Sunshine, 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Ken Doherty.
And I'm Reggie Corrigan.
And welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, it's a wild and windy out there this morning. Hopefully you can stay with us over the next couple of hours as we warm you up and get set for a great sporting weekend. It's rugby week two in the Six Nations. And let's hope things go a little better in Edinburgh later today than they did last Saturday. Oh, that was terrible. I was there. Ireland were second best in everything last weekend. And we're hoping Joe Schmidt has a plan to take down the Scots today. In football, it's a busy one across channel this weekend. There's some big European matches, of course, coming next week. But all Irish eyes will be on the return of domestic action. Next Friday night, Alan Colley will be along to look at the season ahead for some of the Irish sides. GAA and any time Dublin take on Kerry, you know there's going to be sparks and some fireworks. Later this evening in Tralee, we're hoping for more of the same. Declan Drake will be along in the show to look at this evening's match, and we'll get his thoughts on some potential return for Jim Gavin's men. Dean Ryan will be along to look at some racing, of course, but only in Ireland, as the UK are on a shutdown with the outbreak of equine flu. So plenty to get our teeth in to over the next few hours. As usual, you can get in touch with the show. You can text us on 087-11-55777. And of course, we are on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, and our Twitter account at Sport1068. Good morning, Reginald.
Good morning, Ken. How are you?
How are you? I'm very, very well. It is a bit wild and windy out there, isn't
it? Crazy outside, yeah. We got blown away coming in.
It was, yeah. Nice and warm inside. Let's say a little special welcome and thank you to Ben, my taxi driver this morning, who took me in, who said he was going to tune in. So we have one more listener this morning, Reg. So
morning, Ben.
Say Ben, and his good friend Bill as well.
So I'm dropping you off.
We couldn't get in the door. We forgot the code, or it wasn't working anyway. But we're here now, and anyway. Reggie, last week, I was at the match.
Before I get into last week, just a quick mention about some results from last night, Ken.
Oh, yeah, go on.
So, great to see the Ireland women bouncing back from their pretty heavy defeat last week against England. They were outclassed last week, fair to say, but like I always say, it's kind of an unfair comparison because you've got an English team that are full-time professionals and you've got the Irish ladies who are amateur, so it's a tough ask to go out against England and play, and they were well beaten last week, and you know they hold their hands up on that. But they bounced back brilliantly last night and got a 22-5 victory in Scotland. Alison Miller marking her return with a try and a bonus point victory there. Aoife McDermott and Lee Lyons crossed in the first half, and they continued playing well. So you know, it was a great bounce back for them, and well done, and keeps their championship hopes on track. Although England will be hard to beat in that tournament, no doubt about it. And also the under-20s. Another brilliant win last week. You may not have seen this, Ken, but Ireland's 20s were playing down in what's it called now, Independent Park, I think, down in Cork, and they were losing 17-0 at one point against a very strong and talented English side. But they managed to come back and win the game. And I think
fantastic.
It was 35-22 or something like that in the end. An amazing comeback. Brilliant performance. Really, really great game. And last night they continued on with those winning ways. Very similar scoreline to the ladies, actually. 24-5. They beat Scotland last night. So, you know, up in the Netherdale ground. So, you know, away from home, up on the Scottish borders. Difficult place to go and get a victory. So, very impressive performance. And Scott Penny scoring a try, and Dylan Tierney Martin as well. So Harry Byrne as well, playing well there. Of course, a brother of Rossbourne for Leinster. Yeah. So a good line of tens coming through.
Julie, wasn't Julie's son playing as well? Do you remember Julie during the week?
That's
Julie
right.
O'Mahony, is it?
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So really good performance.
And what was the final score?
The final score was 24-5.
Fantastic.
So it was really good.
Oh, well done.
It was a great run. So fair play to them. And
some young guns coming through.
Yeah, but back to last week, you asked me about that initially.
Yeah. It was a shocker. I was at the game, but I couldn't believe, the first 5 minutes, the tackle on, Earls set the tone.
The line,
set the tone for the whole match.
Yeah.
I thought he was very lucky to stay on the field, wasn't he?
I suppose.
Because it was the first tackle, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say he got it in the ear about it. He just shot out the line. It was just a bad defensive error, very uncharacteristic of him, very unlike him. And he was struggling to make up for it then continually after that. They were peppering him with high balls. He took a few very big hits. He looked injured to me, to be honest with you, after one of the hits. I didn't think he'd be staying on the pitch. And he just looked a little bit forlorn and out of place. But you get situations. He read it. He thought he'd be able to shoot up and make the tackle or get the intercept, but it was just badly timed and badly done. And it just gave England that perfect start. A 7-point lead within the first couple of minutes. And like you were there, it set the tone for the whole game. Then from then on, the English backs were up. They were feeling confident and they weren't afraid to go and have a go at Ireland.
Now, last week, I want to ask you, Ting, because I said that I'd heard one of the rugby analysts, one of the rugby analysts during the week was saying that England and Jones was bringing a team of bullies. And you said, if I can quote you, that you said this Ireland team cannot be bullied because they're too experienced and they're too long in the tooth and they're too good. However, how do you feel now?
I think you were right. I think he was right. I think they were probably out-muscled. They were out-muscled. There's not probably about it. They were out-muscled. I think they've been very honest themselves in that assessment, and they've come out and as much as admitted to that they weren't winning the collisions, as they call them. They weren't physical enough. They weren't winning the battles of the physicality. They made too many errors defensively, like that shooting out of the line. And they were just, they were, the better team beat them on the day. I mean, I don't think there can be any arguments about that.
No.
England played better. They did come and dominate the game, and Ireland couldn't find a way back into it.
Were you surprised? Because Ireland, the way they played against, in November in the internationals, against New Zealand.
Yeah.
You couldn't really see this performance coming from Ireland.
No, I didn't see it coming.
Were we getting a bit carried away with Ireland and beat New Zealand, the world number one? Is this just sort of a kick up the backside and a bit of ground than you would expect, or would you say for the Irish team?
Yeah, I don't think it's any harm.
No. A lot of people are saying that it's no harm, it's probably the sort of grounding that we might need because of the, not for the Six Nations, but the Rugby World Cup.
Well, the World Cup is the big thing this year. It's going to come down to, in a few weeks' time, everyone will have forgotten about the Six Nations and they'll be very much focused on the World Cup. So it is going to come down to that, and it is a World Cup year. I think there were a couple of key things. The decision to put Henshaw in at full back ultimately didn't work out. It was a bit of an experiment. He hadn't been in that position for a long time, and albeit it might be a position that he enjoys and that he likes, at that level you really need to have the experience. So that was an experiment that didn't work out as well as they would like. I think certainly in the back row we were outplayed. That's the easiest way to describe it. I felt we were missing someone like Sean O'Brien from early on, who could come in and take it on and bring that physicality to the game. We seemed just to be playing second fiddle to the English back row the whole of the game. So, I mean, that was a factor as well. And we saw that CJ Stander actually was very badly injured and played on with that injury. So that was a blow, but he wasn't himself. He didn't play to the standard that he could, but that injury might explain some of that.
Yeah.
And I think the likes of Ian Henderson being injured in the second row was badly missed. Tyke Byrne being injured in the second row, God, we could have really done with him. I felt we were just a little bit undercooked in the second row compared to them. Their second row definitely outplayed us. But in the back line, I think we lost the battle of the two tens and the halfbacks. I think they certainly outplayed us. Farrell controlled things masterfully for England. He was getting very good ball off his forwards. He used it very well. And I felt that the English backs just got the upper hand, and that was really the difference between the two teams.
What about Conor Murray? Didn't have his best game, did he?
No, he didn't, and neither did Johnny Sexton, and neither did a number of the players. But again, you're looking at Murray. He's not long back from a fairly extensive injury, and I think that showed. I think
A bit nervousness.
Well, it just a little bit off the pace compared to what he'd normally be. That sharpness that's there wasn't there. But again, you know, your 9 and your 10 can only play as well as your pack of forwards. And it comes down to the type of ball and the delivery of ball that they were getting. Our lineout didn't function as well as it could have. We weren't really getting quick ball from the breakdown because England were challenging very well in that area, and the English defence was set up really well. So the 9 and 10, Johnny and Connor were under savage pressure all day long. They didn't get much freedom, you know.
Okay, question about Johnny Sexton. Now, I mean, he's been such a great servant for Ireland over the years, and you know, you can't really sort of question his commitment. But however, there were signs during the match that he was agitated and giving out a little bit. His attitude didn't seem spot on. And maybe, if you were playing with Johnny Sexton that day, does that rub off on the rest of the players, do you think?
I know what you're talking about. I know what you're getting at, but I think the point would be, for me, would be, well, that's the way he is. I mean, if you've seen and watched Johnny Sexton over the years, they're used to that. It's not that his attitude was wrong. It's just that he gets frustrated if things are not going right or if other players are not doing their jobs properly. Yeah, I think that was coming out and that was pretty evident. And I think he was getting frustrated with those around him. And then that has a knock-on effect on his own game too. So I think it was more frustration that was coming out in him rather than the wrong attitude, you know?
Okay, so I'll keep quiet.
No, not at all. I mean, you're not the first one to say that. It did very much come across, and he himself would be the first to admit that it wasn't his strongest game ever. And I suppose that's the fine line between, you know, getting it wrong and being brilliant, is trying to manage those voices that'll be going on in your head as a 10, where the frustrations of balls and mistakes being made can get to you a little bit if other people are making those mistakes, and then you still have to try and steer the ship and guide them back into the game and get a performance out of them. So there must be an awful lot of battles going on inside his head the whole time.
Okay,
trying to manage everything.
We're going to have Shane Bourne on. Yeah. He's going to be our guest for the rugby slot. That'll be at 10 o'clock. Yeah. So lots to get through your teeth with him during the rugby slot. Last question I'm going to ask you, which is probably on a lot of people's minds as well. Since Joe Schmidt has announced that he's going to leave the Irish camp after the World Cup, would it not have been better to announce that after the World Cup? Or do you think that subconsciously in a lot of the players' minds before the World Cup that it's a good idea? Or do you think it would have been better to announce it after the World Cup?
I suppose you know, there's two trains of thought, and exactly what you're saying there, that it might affect the player's mindset. But I don't think that's the case. I think it's better to have it out in the open rather than have some speculation hanging over there the whole time during the World Cup or in the build-up to the World Cup. Is it not his last time? Is he staying? Is he going? That kind of stuff. They don't need those other distractions. So I suppose he felt, and I think rightly so, that it's better to just be out there, be honest about it, focus entirely on the 12 months that are ahead, and at the same time develop a team that are going to come in and take over his legacy. Okay. I think announcing it shouldn't really affect things for the World Cup at all.
All right. Okay, we leave it there. Those questions are well and truly asked. So if you have any questions as well that you may think, any of our listeners, please do text us 087 1155 777. And I'll ask Reggie the questions that you may pose to us as well. Any of your questions on last week about the England game? And of course, coming up with the Scotland game again, how can Ireland retrieve the situation, and of course the Six Nations, a big task ahead, and particularly Scotland as well, Reg, because they'll be full of confidence after last week.
Absolutely full of confidence. Good team, I've said it to you.
Edinburgh before. Doing well, of course, as well.
Edinburgh, Glasgow doing well, good players there. Gregor Townsend has a good record with Scotland. They've played 19 games, he's won 12, which is not a bad return considering where Scotland have been over the last number of years. So they'll be well prepped for this, and I tell you, Scotland in Scotland in Murrayfield is a tough, very, very tough game to win. So Ireland are up against it, and there's added pressure on Ireland. We talked to Shane Byrne about this after 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
But there is added pressure. They need to get a win. If they lose today, it could very easily be one of the worst seasons that Ireland have had, with Wales still to come, France still to come. So there's that added pressure on this team going into this game to get a result and get things back on track, you know.
Absolutely, big time. So loads to talk about to Shane Bourne, of course, a former teammate of Reggie's and international, of course, rugby player and very astute commentator as well and analyst as well. Looking forward to hear what he has to say. That's at 10 o'clock as well. So text us if you have any questions as well. 087-1155-777. Talking about pressure, the Scousers are under severe pressure as well. Fasten your seatbelts, it says in one of the papers today. Jurgen Klopp warns stars to fight till the end. Ooh, it's getting tense.
It's gone very tense.
It's great.
Two draws, that's brilliant. Two draws in the last couple of games, and bringing Bournemouth coming to Anfield today. They need victory, Liverpool. They need to push on. They can't afford to let it slip again, because everybody's talking about them blowing it already. And so long, so far to go in this league yet. I mean, it's crazy.
12 games left.
Yeah, but I mean, you know,
lots 12 of points,
games when it's so tight at the top. City on and Liverpool both on the same points at the moment. So, and Spurs coming right up behind them on 57 points as well. And United, of course, Ole manager of the month. you know, they've got Fulham today, haven't they?
Is it Fulham they have? Fulham away, half 12, early kickoff. Of course, Liverpool are playing Bournemouth. Big game tomorrow, Manchester City against Chelsea as well.
That's
so,
right.
Tough test for Manchester City. But it's all about Klopp in the back of the papers. Owen, of course, Michael Owen, former Liverpool striker and Manchester United striker. Talk of pressure on Liverpool squad, nonsense. I don't believe that. They are under serious pressure. Against West Ham, they weren't very good at all.
Yeah.
So, maybe the home game today might sort of settle their
nerves. How do you feel it's going? Is there, like, you know, all the chat of them blowing it and everything else? Is there a feeling that maybe Liverpool have let it slip, and that City now getting back? They're okay, another game ahead, City, but will they have the wherewithal to kind of push it on and just hold out?
Well, I mean, there's some big matches to come. You know, Manchester United are hosting Liverpool and the host of Manchester City as well.
Yeah.
So there's some big games come, and of course the Champions League they've got to concentrate on as well. I think after sort of February, when you get into March, you've got about maybe, you know, 8 or 9 games left, then you're going to really tell, you know. I mean, you know what it's like, you know, playing with a team sport, a bit of pressure in the last few games.
Have teams worked Liverpool out, though? I mean, you know, it seems to be 2 draws in the last couple of games, and, it's a very specific style, like the attacking style that they play with, and are they being worked out?
I don't know whether it's being worked out, but I think, you know what's happening, and what you could see with the Leicester game, the crowd are getting very nervous, you know.
Yeah.
And when the crowd get nervous, the players are getting nervous, you know.
Yeah.
And when you're like, Anfield is a real fortress. I don't know. This is looking from the outside, but Anfield is a real fortress for Liverpool. It has been all this season.
Yeah.
And against Leicester, the crowd went very, very quiet. Normally they're very vociferous, but they went very, very quiet. So it'll be interesting to see if the crowd start feeling the pressure. The players, they haven't won it for like 19 years. So it's a long time. 20 years, is it? Or more? I can't remember when's the last time. The last time they won it, I think, was 1990.
Yeah. It's a long, long time.
28 years? Yeah. 29 years this year?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. That is.
So it's a long, long time.
Well,
it's
1990 since they last won it. Yeah, it is.
It's a long time. So it'll build more for the likes of Liverpool than it will for City, because City have only, they only won it last year. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. But anyway, if you have any questions that you want to pose to us, as I said, on football, if you're a Liverpool fan, if you're a Man City fan, 087-1155-777. We're going to be talking to Dean Ryan, of course, as well.
Yeah, and action...
What's going on over there in England? It's terrible, isn't
it? Well, action is set to continue here at home, despite all that's going on in the UK due to the equine influenza, for anybody who's been under a rock and hasn't heard about it. The Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board have imposed enhanced measures to secure the sport in this country against the outbreak. It's almost like going back to the foot and mouth of 2001. Yeah. Runners from Britain are still barred, while all horses racing here must have been vaccinated against the flu within 8 weeks of their race. 3 more horses at Don McCain's yard have tested positive for the disease, so that's over 170 yards in the UK on lockdown. Mm-hmm. And it's also been confirmed that one of McCain's infected horses ran at Ayr on Wednesday, so they're hoping that didn't spread the disease. But the horses aren't showing any symptoms at this time. So racing in the UK is suspended till Wednesday. Still have it going on here, but it's a very, very serious. I listened to a lot of this during the week. It's a very serious issue, and there's a lot of very scared horsey people in the UK and here. worried about this. And with Cheltenham just around the corner.
Ginny, they want to defect Cheltenham. So yeah. I think that's what they're worried about as well. Yeah. But, you know, the other side of the coin, Nigel Twiston-Davis, just in the back of the Star today, has blasted the BHA, the Horse Racing Authority, British Horse Racing Authority, as a massive overreaction. He says it's a massive overreaction. All horses are vaccinated. And so when they get it, it's not really anything to worry about, he said. They get sick, but not that sick, just a snotty nose and temperature. And he's given out about the overreaction. But I don't know. I think it's better to be safe than sorry.
I don't think so. I don't think you can take risks with things like this. I mean, if they're vaccinated, yet they're still getting it, that means there's a different strain after getting through somewhere or other. So, I mean, you can't tell. These super bugs, we get them in human beings, they get them in animals too, so it's too big an industry.
You had mad cow disease for a long time.
I still have it.
Anyway, the last couple of weeks, Dean Ryan, he had two winners last week,
right,
and a place, Road to Respect, which was beaten narrowly, but he had La Bago Raw in his Lucky 15, and Dallas the Picton was a winner as well. The other one, Vision, there wasn't placed, unfortunately. So we had 2 out of 4 last week. The week before, we had 3 out of 4.
Yeah.
So we've had a good last couple of weeks. If anybody was listening in and doing the Lucky 15, Dean Ryan, again, will be on with us just before 9:45 and giving us his runners and riders for, of course, Irish Racing. Hopefully we'll get a few more winners today as well.
Of course, we'll have Declan Drake on a little bit later on the show as well to talk Gaelic Games. Semple Stadium hosts a heavyweight encounter this evening as the All-Ireland Club Hurling Championship reaches the semi-final stage. Six-time champions Ballyhale Shamrocks take on Waterford, and Munster champions Ballygunner with a 5 o'clock throw-in at Thurles. And today's other semi-final, see St. Thomas's of Galway take on Antrim's Cushendale at Parnell Park, where there's a 3 o'clock start. And interestingly enough as well, talk that Dermot Connolly could be back playing for the Dublin this summer. There's reports that the 31-year-old has been training with the Dubs' high-performance manager, Brian Cullen. So,
fantastic. I'd love to see him back, would you?
Absolutely.
What a talented footballer he
hasn't been. He hasn't been in the side since last year's league win against Mayo.
He went on a sabbatical over to America and everything. He was playing Portland or football in Boston or New York, somewhere like that.
Yeah. There's also reports, I don't know how true they are, that Jason Sherlock has left Gavin's backroom team, so we'll have to talk to Declan about that and ask if that's the case. Mayo manager James Horan, he's made 5 changes for the side for Saturday's Allianz Football League meeting with Cavan. David Clark replaces Rob Henley in goal with Ger Canfrachy in fullback for Brandon Harrison. And there's a first start at midfield for Matthew Ruan, and Westport's Colin Moran making a full debut at corner forward. So interesting changes there. In golf, Graham McDowell is moving himself into contention on day 2 of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Portrush man, he's 5 shots off the lead at 6 under par, and Shane Lowry is currently 2 under. Phil Mickelson is holding the outright lead there at 11 under.
Pebble Beach, I'll be talking to Stephen O'Brien next, of course, UK Packers podcast. And if anybody was watching that Super Bowl last week, a low-scoring game.
What a load
terrible.
Of rubbish.
It was brutal, wasn't it?
It was a rubbish game.
I mean, listen, we've seen some boring, sporting occasions over
Super
the last
boring,
few years. Yeah, yeah. And listen, I've probably been in most of them myself. But anyway, let's not talk. But that was one of the, it was a big sort of, very big letdown, wasn't it?
What about the halftime show? Was that any good? Did you like that?
Oh, it could stay up for it.
Oh,
it
was up for it. Yeah.
Was it? Did you like it? Was that any good?
What, Maroon the halftime show?
Maroon 5.
Maroon 5, what's his name? Prancing around with tattoos and hardly getting on it. Wasn't my cup of tea, you know, to be honest with you. But a bit like the match, it was a bit of an anticlimax.
Okay, well, listen, Stephen O'Brien is coming up next. Keep those texts coming in, 087 11 55 777. Marie says, I can, Reggie. Was the referee not bullied by England? I thought there were instances where another yellow was warranted, but he seemed to not be given one. That's enough. Only Joe Schmidt can turn negative loss to positive, missing 5 key players in World Cup year. A bonus point win today away to Scotland. Another text in, Reg.
Yeah, just on the first point about the referee, I don't like that ref. I never have. I think he can be intimidated by either the home crowd or other people, but there was definitely a yellow card incident that was missed. I've seen it on video since. Tulagi coming in with a shoulder charge, and no sighting on it either, which was a strange one. Definitely should have been acted upon at the time, but no, I think the referee didn't affect the overall result. We were just outplayed on the day. On the other point, the 5 injuries, I'm not buying into that one because we had five key injuries against Argentina in the World Cup in 2015, and it did affect us very, very badly. But in recent times, I know it's not good to lose players, and obviously there are key men that we could have done with, but in recent times we've seen that Joe has built a squad, and for World Cup is what he is doing, is building a squad where we have replacements so that we don't repeat what happened in 2015 should we have key people injured and key personnel injured. So we can't go on, we can't buy into that because we have to have the backup, you know.
Okay.
So
okay.
And the players that in the past have been good enough to step in, so you know, it's just a poor day.
It's just a bad day all around. Okay. Well, we had another bad day last week at the Super Bowl. Stephen O'Brien from UK Packers podcast now joins me on the line. Stephen, very good morning to you.
How are you, Ken? What's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on with you?
Yeah, what's going on?
I stayed up all night last Sunday for that rubbish.
It seems like you're blaming me, Red.
Because you said last week, and I'll quote unquote, it's going to be a high scoring game, Ken. What? It's going to be a great Super Bowl. And make sure you watch it. And what did we get? A damp squid. 11-3, was it? Or 13-3?
13-3, God bless your memory. Now, in my defence, I said the Patriots win, that was against the bookies. It's the only thing I have gone for me. Listen, lads, I've had illnesses that I've enjoyed more than the Super Bowl, to be honest. I had a dental extraction recently, and I was looking back at that with Longy gone. I wouldn't mind some of that action again. This was, it was bad. It was. You see, the thing is, this is the problem with a game like the Super Bowl, right? There's such build-up for it, and there's people tuning in and don't usually watch it, so the NFL are super conscious if it's going to be a good game or not. Mm. Now, they can't, like, if they had Xbox controllers and they could control the players, then that's what they'd want to do. But they're going to have to let them just play. This was tipped, and to sort of show you how sort of momentous this was and what everybody expected, these were the two highest scoring offenses in the playoffs. You know, the Rams are one of the highest scoring offenses in the league. They're one of the most exciting, like we talked about last week. They're the more riskier of the teams, whereas Bill Belichick is meant to be sort of more conservative, and he kind of takes away your good players. Mm-hmm. But this was meant to be an offensive shootout, and we didn't get that. Now, there's a number of ways. Now, I'm sort of not a hipster or whatever to do with NFL, or a purist in some sort of form, but I don't mind a game if it's low scoring, if the defense is good, because people seem to forget about the defense in the sense that, you know, if you look at red zone on TV, it's all about like Odell Beckham Jr. doing the one-handed catch or someone making, you know, some crazy sort of highlight plays. I don't mind a bit of defense from time to time, but we didn't even have that in this game. It was okay defense, but the fact of the matter really is these two quarterbacks just had a really terrible night. Tom Brady kind of came alive. They poked him with a stick and he came alive at the end of the game and made, there was only really one drive where he was lofting balls to Gronkowski and Julian Edelman, where he, you know, to put it this way, it was the end of the third quarter and it was and they were in the red zone. That was the first time in the game and the last time in the game really that any team was in the red zone. And they punched it in for a touchdown. But look, it started off okay. I mean, we had Cordarrelle Patterson for the Patriots making a run down, and he was only sort of thrown, you know, off the sideline by the kicker for the Rams. And I was thinking, oh my God, if this sets the pace for the game, brilliant. Then Tom Brady comes out and gets picked off on his first pass play, and I was like, oh my God, the new dynasty has arrived. You know what I mean? The Rams are going to commit to it, but didn't go that way in the end. Now, the only thing was, it was a weird game, wasn't it, really, that it was close up to the end, but I don't know about you lads from watching it, but it never seemed like the Rams were actually going to make anything happen really in this game. It was just like constant punting. And the one highlight for the Rams in this game was that they recorded two things really, I guess. One is the longest punt in Super Bowl history. That's not a good thing. And number two is that they equaled the longest field goal in Super Bowl history at 53 yards. Now, if that's the highlight of your game offensively in a Super Bowl, something's gone pretty bad for you on the day.
Jared Goff bottled it, though, didn't he? I mean, there were definitely chances for the Rams, but he just couldn't take the pressure.
Dead right, Reg, right, because, and again, to highlight that point that you made, the sort of real indicator of how we blew it was, is that number one, he was holding on to the ball too long, and there was one play in particular that you can spot to kind of sum up his night, was where it was a busted coverage. Cooks was free, his wide receiver in the end zone, putting his hand up to say hello. And then Jared Goff saw him late, lofted the ball, and only that Jason McCourty came in late for the Patriots and knocked the ball away. That was a surefire touchdown. But everybody in the commentary, everybody watching the game, everybody on Twitter, everywhere could see Cooks open, but Jared Goff, for whatever reason, just couldn't see it. Now, I said this was one of the talking points coming into the game. Would this game be too big for Jared Goff and for Sean McVay because he couldn't scheme his way? And these two young sort of offensive minds An awful lot said about them. They just didn't have the answers for Bill Belichick on the day. The old fox comes back again and shuts down their best player. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
The old experienced bull against the young bull, and the old experience worked out a magic trick, you would have to say.
Yeah, because look, Ken, it's all about what Bill Belichick does well. Is what he does is he game plans really, really well. It's really boring. It's like the guy who comes into class when you're in school and knows all the answers. You're kind of like, all right, come on, you know, get it wrong from time to time. Yeah. What he'll do is he'll come up with the little bits and pieces just to take away your best stuff. Simply, he stacked five or six men at the line with the snap so that the Rams couldn't run the ball. They couldn't even pretend to run the ball either. And Todd Gurley, their main running back. Mysteriously, again, people are saying that... And the Rams could get into trouble for this, is that he was injured and they never declared it properly, which means that they kind of tried to make out to the Patriots that he was more available than he was to sort of, you know, to kind of hide the fact that he wasn't going to be playing well and that the Patriots would still need a game plan for him. And as well as that, they shut down Aaron Donald, their main defensive player for the Rams, Patriots offensive line. Aaron Donald, as dominant as he has been all season, the season sack leader, he only got one hit on Tom Brady all night, so he could sit behind the pocket now. Tom Brady should have done an awful lot more with the time and space that he had. And then what did they do? And what I was saying before, the you know, last week, is that they got pressure on Jared Goff. They confused him a little bit, and he made poor decisions. And that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Okay. So listen, I went to bed. Reggie saw the bit of the halftime. What was the halftime like?
Well, Reggie summed it up there. Just it was Maroon 5 just pouncing around. Basically, that's all. I mean, people gave out what Janet Jackson did, but they weren't mind when Maroon 5 was doing it. Yeah, it was okay. It's bad when Maroon 5 is the real talking point and the best part of the Super Bowl going around. But yeah, look, it went off without a hitch. And what I did think was a classy move by the NFL was there was an awful lot of talk about, you know, the Colin Kaepernick situation and black artists turning down that halftime show. But they really made it all about, you know, civil rights and going back to all of that type of stuff. So it's pretty good that they didn't try to avoid the subject, is that they tried to put it front and center.
Sure.
So I think that was probably a good thing for the NFL to do, and shows that, you know, they are culturally sensitive when it comes to things like that. But a long way to go to repair relations, really, in that regard, I think.
Right. Well, Belichick, the legend. You know, where do the Patriots go here? I mean, are they spent force now? Did they come back even stronger now? I mean, what's going to happen? Age obviously is not on the side. So what do you think the future holds for the Patriots?
Well, you see, the thing is, most of the time a team can decline in two areas. One is the coach and the second is the quarterback. They're the two main ones, you know. And we've seen with, like, my Packers, for instance, this season, where Mike McCarthy wasn't getting through to the players, and they talk about complacency. That's something that you don't have in New England. Bill Belichick, like, as long as he's been in the game, he's never let his message get stale. And that's because he's had such a churning of players, and he'll get in old players and sort of revitalize their careers. So in that regard, Reg, I mean, Bill Belichick is always going to be consistent. Now, his problem is going to be his successor to Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Now, Tom Brady has said that he's not going to retire. But if you look at that Super Bowl, for instance, and it's unfair to do it, but this season, really, Tom Brady, they were trying to write him off as well to say that he's after regressing, because that tends to catch up on especially an NFL quarterback very, very quickly, where they seem to be doing great the prior year, and then all of a sudden it just falls apart. So it'll be interesting to see if Tom Brady can keep up that level of play. Now, if I was him, which I'm not, I would probably bail out at this stage, because, you know, how long you can keep up with these young lads, and as well as that, you know, the defensive players are getting faster and stronger every single year. So eventually you will be not found out, because Tom Brady is one of the greatest of all time. It's absolutely undisputed. But I don't know where they go from here at the quarterback position. They seemingly had a successor, but they let him go to San Francisco. So, you know, it's hard to know what he does here. And apparently Belichick was really annoyed when you know, Robert Kraft let him go. So I don't know what they do. And you see, the problem with the Patriots is when they come into the draft, they can't draft a high quarterback, because they're always down in the basement of the draft picks because they do so well. And that can ultimately hurt a team.
Yeah.
So I don't see any real change, as long as they can sort of plug someone in, a quarterback, because out of every other sort of area of the field, be it wide receiver or wherever, or defense, you know what I mean? They tend to falter in defense, but then they tend to patch it up and do well. So I reckon that they'll remain consistent, but the question mark is definitely over the quarterback position, and that has to come to a head eventually.
Okay. So when do we see the NFL? When does it start again? I know the draft and what happens and preseason and stuff like that, so... When are we likely to see NFL on our TV screens?
Well, game-wise, it comes back with the Hall of Fame game in Canton, and that's early August. But for any sort of big NFL heads, it really starts with the scouting combine, which is where we get the top college draft prospects, you know, and they do the 40-yard dashes and the cone drills and all the rest, just to see sort of how elite they are physically. Okay. And that starts in February 26th, so that's okay. Not too far away. And then after that, then it's the NFL draft, which happens in April, and then it's sort of, you know, you have sort of OTAs and sort of mini camps and stuff like that happening where they bring the rookies in. So, look, they always say no days off for the NFL, and it's certainly true because the next big event is the scouting combine in February. But the game, you know, the preseason really comes back in August, and then the game starts again in September. So, a bit of a way away, yes.
What are you going to do between now and then?
Well, I'm going to keep the podcast going once a week. So, we're going to delve in. There's always something to talk about, especially with these things, because as we've seen, like the Packers, for instance, I mean, you know, most of their coaching staff is gone. They're after bringing in a new head coach. He's after bringing in new offensive coordinators and all the rest.
Yeah.
So, podcast-wise, we're going to keep it going. There's plenty to talk about. And there's plenty to talk about in other sort of NFL spheres as well, about, you know, how teams are sort of shaping up. We've seen some teams become dominant sort of this year, with the Chicago Bears doing well, Lamar Jackson and Baltimore doing well, and sort of there's always the movers and shakes. And as well as that, we have players who are going to be coming up to be released, who become free agents. So there'll be plenty of moving and shaping of players moving teams as well.
Okay. Well, listen, Stephen, have a great time, and UK Packers podcast for anybody listening, tune into that, and keep up to date with all the NFL news from Stephen O'Brien. Stephen, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for all your help to the show from both of us here and all of us at Dublin's Talking Sport.
Thanks again, it's been great.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, we'll speak to you again very soon. It's racing now. I'm delighted to welcome Dean Ryan from the Race Hour podcast at gambling.com. A very good morning to you, Dean.
How are you doing?
Very, very well, very well. And a good week last week, Dan. A bit unlucky. We had a couple of winners. And Road to Respect only beaten narrowly by Bells Hill. What a race that was.
Some race. Despite, you know, the ground being a bit quick and losing a few of the, you know, other competitors for the Irish Gold Cup, we were treated to a bit of a Ruby Walsh Masterclass. Oh. In fact, over the weekend, we got a bit of a Ruby Walsh Masterclass. He was amazing on Classical Dream, getting the better of stablemate Aramon. And then in that Irish Gold Cup, getting Bells Hill up on the line against Road to Respect, you know, we were treated to some superb finishes.
Yeah.
The big takeaway horse of that meeting, though, was Apples Jade.
Oh, Apples Jade was amazing. What a horse. What will that run in now? I mean, you saw that, Reg, as well, did you? What a race.
Everyone was saying before that race, I mean, she was going for an Irish champion head. Everyone was saying before that, Connections, Michael O'Leary and Gordon Elliott, that, you know, you run in the race, you can win at Cheltenham, and that'll be the mare's hurdle. But now, she's going to win that by 16 lengths. Super Sunday back in seconds, a decent yard. Stick Mellon was well beaten. He's put them all to bed. They'll go for the champion hurdle. If they go for the champion hurdle, then it's Bouvardet, who's won it twice in a row against Apples Jade.
Wow.
I mean, that's going to be superb, as long as we get there, Ken.
As long as we get there. Okay, as long as we get there, fingers crossed. Let's hope this equine flu doesn't affect Cheltenham. What's the latest on it, Dean?
Well, you know, the three cases that popped up from Donald McCain's yard, and he was getting a bit stick, completely wrong on social media and things like that about, you know, why he'd send sick horses to the race course. I don't think he's done that at all. I think he's just, he's notified everyone in good time, and now they're on a bit of a, I heard Nigel Twiss and Davis say it was an overreaction. I'm not sure it is, because until you know exactly what's going on, how can you make that decision? And horses will not be really under any kind of great threat from this. Equine flu is very much like human flu. So, you know, you feel under the weather, you're obviously not able to go and race. You're going to get a bit unwell. Unfortunately, you know, there's no requirement for every horse in the UK to have this vaccine. So what happens is, if something like this spreads, we could have a lot of sick horses across the country. And they're trying to avoid that. Now, the racing fraternity, all vaccinated. So at the moment, there will be no racing until Wednesday next week earliest. I think we're probably looking at least another week to 10 days after that, but a lot will depend on the results that come back from these 174 yards now that are all getting their horses vaccinated. If you think there's like probably average 30 to 50 horses need to those yards, that's a lot of horses they've got to get through.
Certainly.
There's a lot of tests they've got to do, it's a lot of things they've got to get through. So, you know, fingers crossed. I think we're very close to Cheltenham, so that is a massive concern. If this was to drag into last week of February, trying to get horses ready for Cheltenham is going to be very tough, and it will be up to the BHA and, you know, Department of Agriculture and everyone in the UK to get there. Ireland have taken a slightly different view. They haven't had any cases here. Gordon Elliott's runners, who were in the UK when they found the case of equine flu, they came back to Ireland, but they didn't go back to his yard. So everyone's taking very serious precautions here.
Okay.
They have said that if you want to enter horses for Punchestown, get them vaccinated again before the 18th of February, and that makes a lot of sense. So hopefully we'll get there, Ken. I remember Foot and Mouth in 2001, yeah, where it was all off and, you know, there was no travel arrangements for any horse. You couldn't do anything. And so we don't end up there. So
give him,
very much fingers crossed.
Give him a couple of lamb sips, it'll be all right. A couple of hot whiskeys.
Yeah. Send them to bed.
Send them to bed. Okay, well, listen, let's talk about the race and give us a little lucky 15 for today. We've got racing in Nace today. I presume is that where you're going to go?
Yeah, we have to go there. I mean, that's on ITV. It's the only meeting across the UK and Ireland. You know, something I wouldn't think I would be saying on here is that Nace is live on ITV this weekend. But, you know, fair play. And it's great that ITV have picked that up. It's actually not the worst card in the world. Tomorrow's card at Punterstown, I would say, has a bit more quality to it. But if you're looking for a punt at Nace today, I had a decent look at the card. I'm really interested to see De Boucher back for Max Mullins in the 110. That goes in the maiden hurdle. Number two there, Patrick Mullins, the rider. He's won on the horse before. It's a real... a real quirky beast, this one. Plenty of ability. Was a top-class bumper horse. That's number two in the 110 at Nace. That'll go for around 2-1. A lot of eyes will be on Willie Mullins' Prava Laguna in the 210. That's the Opera Hat Mare's listed chase. I wouldn't put it up as a bet, though. I think it might be a little bit vulnerable to the likes of Baldassio, run for Ross O'Sullivan and Ruby Walshanson, knocks this for Gordon Elliott, so we'll skip that. But I think Prav Laguna will go off an odds-on shot. I'm going to take on the recent JP McManus purchase, Conitho, that goes in the 240. It looks a bit short to me. He's around 11-8. Only won 13 days ago at this track. Maze Runner is the one. I'm going to go with Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. This will go off a nice price, around 7-1. The 6-1 field, I think, looks value. Okay. That's Maze Runner number 6. They're disappointed just 45 days ago around Christmas time. So I'm a little bit concerned about it, but I think there's plenty more to come from it. So 7-0 looks a bit of a punt. Okay. Roaring Bulls in the 3-10. Real monster of a horse. Seen him in the flesh a few times. I think there's plenty in the tank for this one. They've been very busy with him. So if Jack Kennedy can get a tune out of him, I think there's a bit more to come from him. So that's Roaring Bull number 4 in the 3-10. Again, he's a decent price, around 13-2 in what looks a pretty competitive handicap chase. And then I've got a flyer for you in the 3-40, Ken. The Adair Manor Opportunity Handicap Hurdle. Great chance for people to see some of the up-and-coming jockeys in Ireland here. Mm. Jer Brody is going to ride William of Wycombe, number 18. He's had three quiet runs, I would say, but showing hints of ability. He was 20-1. He's into 16s. Number 18 in the 3-40. Throw that in for a couple of quid each way, I think, in that 3-40.
Okay, that's William of Wycombe, is it?
Wycombe, yeah.
Wycombe. Okay, brilliant. Okay. So that's the Boucher, Maze Runner, Roaring Bull, and William of Wycombe. Okay, we've got about a minute left, so...
Quick chat about Punchestown. Josie's orders will be a warm order in the cross-country chase, 145 there on Sunday. A cracking EBF novice hurdle, listed contest at 220. Likes of Prince Dobrel, Signorina, Ting Tangle, Top Moon, La Sorella. Really nice race. Lethal Steps looks like a Cheltenham horse going in the 250. Should be a backable price as well. Hopefully get around 5-2 for that one in the 250. And I also like the chance of Some Neck in the big Grand National Trial. That's the Willie Mullins, Rich Ritchie horse from Ruby Walshon. Early faller in the Thiestes Chase. Around 7-1, 8-1. I think that's a bet for the 420 on Sunday. So Ireland keeping the show on the road.
Ireland keeping the show on the road, thankfully, yeah. And hopefully that everything will be sorted across the water and particularly in time for Cheltenham. The Boucher, Maze Runner, Roaring Bull and William of Wycombe. That's their four for today, and lucky 15. We had a couple of winners last week and three winners out of four the week before. Hopefully it'll all go well.
Thanks for that, good man, David Atwood.
Our podcast at gambling.com. That's where you go for all your racing news. Dino, thanks very much. Have a great weekend.
You too, enjoy.
Keep those texts coming in, 087 11 55 777. Of course, we had Dean Ryan and Stephen O'Brien on earlier. And now we're looking forward to our rugby spot with no other than one of the all-time greats that played for Ireland, Mr. Shane Bourne. A very warm welcome to the show, Shane. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. You?
Yes, very good. And hey, listen, we've been reading in the papers, Reggie and I, about your trek to Kilimanjaro and everything, doing it for very worthy causes. I bet there was some creaky bones after that trip.
Bring that tune again.
How did it go?
Listen, it was amazing. Absolutely fantastic experience. Box ticked and all that, but I'm never doing anything like that again.
And you were doing it for, what was your charity that was involved?
The IRFU Charitable Trust, which is fantastic. The Injured Players Fund for Rugby Union. So, yeah, very worthy cause. Myself, Marcus Horn, Mike McCarthy, Stephen Ferris with the rugby players and 32 other people went up the mountain. And listen, great set of people, amazing things. Like you're climbing, was it the highest freestanding mountain in the world? Wow. You're basically just short of 6 kilometers straight up. And, you know, it's an experience to honestly to be experienced, but it's so hard.
How long, very hard.
It's 5 days up, 2 days down.
Wow.
And that's because you parachuted, was it?
I wish. And I tell you, the downs are almost as hard, almost as hard as the ups. Yeah, because the slopes, like, you literally go straight up the mountain.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you're coming straight back down is so hard. Yeah. It's just you have to watch every step.
Zigzagging.
You're on scree, you're zigzagging, and the pressure on your legs is just unbelievable. And
what about the, what's the most difficult bit? Is it the altitude? Is it the lack of oxygen?
I didn't get any, you know, ill effects from it. Some people suffer from a bit of altitude sickness, which is basically starts as headaches and things like that, and it can upset your stomach and et cetera. But the only thing is, you just notice that you can't push any further. Like on the last day, on the last ascent, there was 1,000 meters left to go, and you just push on from the last camp. And you're barely clearing your own footprint. That's how fast you're shuffling.
Really?
And you can't go any quicker.
Yeah.
And you can't say, oh, my, you know, my back was burning, my legs were tired, my cat. It's just your body is just on fire. And you just can't go any quicker at all.
Yeah. So it wouldn't be fair to say this was a jolly day.
No, like, listen, Reggie, you and I, we've been through some hard times, army camps and fitness sessions and, you know, absolute murder ball. And this was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done.
Really?
There was nothing. Yeah. But it's still, look, amazing experience, and a lot of fantastic money raised with a brilliant group of people, and the Earth's Edge, the people who brought us up there. To get the whole 32 of us up was just brilliant.
It was fantastic.
That's a hell of an achievement by them, and you know, it was, you know, great. And it was really unfortunate because we had so many clear nights and views, and we could see everything, and then on the summit night, the bloody clouds were everywhere. You couldn't see a thing. So anyway, look, that's the way
now
it
listen,
goes.
I've been up the Sugarloaf myself now a couple of times. It's nothing like that, is it?
No, it's not.
Oh, listen, congratulations. Fantastic achievement. And as you said, one of the boxes ticked, and anyway, for sure,
correct.
You know.
Correct.
Before we go on to the rugby about last week, and of course what's going to happen today and this weekend, tell us a little bit about the Legends, because you had a big game last week as well yourselves.
Yeah, we did. The Ireland England Legends, the 11th year of it. And we had the two teams out, good group of players getting together again. But this year was for a special push because we were doing it for Doddy Weir and his foundation, the My Name is Doddy Foundation, which is, you know, as hopefully most of the rugby family know, he's been diagnosed with motor neuron disease, is, you know, unfortunately, is the terminal diagnosis. And incredibly, nothing has been done in research in 25 years. That's what his foundation is trying to kickstart again, get all that running again, and get people finding, because, you know, the solution, some sort of treatment could be very, very close and just nobody's looking.
Yeah.
So, it was great day. You know, the weather drove a few people away from it because it was a bit chilly. But look, it was still a fantastic day out, and, you know, we got to see a lot of good pals for the weekend. And, you know, we're ticking along. We're well over the €1 million now that we've raised in the time we've been doing it. So hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah, and a few points afterwards, no doubt.
Yeah, correct. Right throughout the weekend.
Absolutely. Before we talk about Scotland today, about the match, the disappointment of last. I was at it last week, and I don't know about you, and I didn't ask Reggie this, but the atmosphere at the game was very, very subdued. I thought it'd be really everybody looking forward to it, going into it. You know, there seemed to be a great excitement, but after about five, six minutes, the atmosphere, you know, was very dead, very subdued for some reason.
Very subdued, yeah. Because
why was that?
Well. Because there's a couple of things. You could tell immediately that there was something up with the team.
Yeah.
You know, that England had caught the team unawares, and you could see that there was trouble ahead. There was no doubt about that. But look, all the old cliches of coming in, like people coming late into the seats with beers and, you know, not sitting down, barely making the anthems, and, you know, the corporate world, you know, getting involved with the purists, can't get tickets, and you know, all of those arguments all add to it. But unfortunately, like, we were all the New Zealand game in the November internationals, I suppose, was the best I've ever seen the Aviva. And we've seen what that's the way the atmosphere should be. And it's an awful pity that it's not like that all the time. And that there just seems to be, it can ebb and flow. You know, it's still an amazing place to go to watch rugby. But unfortunately, it just needs the team to be firing on all cylinders. And we should be there to encourage them when things aren't going well, as well as cheering them on when they are going well.
Mm. Are you surprised, Shane, the reaction this week from the public? There was quite a backlash, actually.
Wasn't there?
Yeah, I was disappointed, I think is the word I'd use, with the backlash. I think, you know, this team have given us so much. It was always going to happen that they'd come a cropper at some stage to some team. I don't think it's time to hit the panic button yet, though.
No, not at all. I suppose, Reggie, look, isn't it in the Irish psyche a bit, you know, that when we're up, you know, there's only one way, you know, to go, and it's down, and that's the way, I suppose, it is, that we don't deal with the favourites tag well, and then we are favourites. If it doesn't work out, there kind of is that bitterness, I suppose, towards it. Like, it's a shame to see. Well, look, you know, as far as the team are concerned, there is things that shouldn't have happened on the pitch. There should have been a response. The senior players, a lot of them, Sexton, Murray, didn't have the game time, I think, that they needed. O'Mahony carrying a rib. You know, all of the people who are very important to the team weren't there to rise it up and to give the people something to cheer about, because there was literally very, very little in that game to cheer about.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we look at today then, I mean, you put the England match to bed, I'm sure the players and the coaching staff have, they'll be completely focused on this. But all of a sudden, this game takes on quite major significance in terms of the season. And Scotland have been going very well with Edinburgh and Glasgow. They're a very, very scary team, very dangerous team, with the likes of Hogg at full back, Johnson in the centre, Seymour on the wing with Maitland. Mm-hmm. You know, there's loads of attacking options there. And Gray and Gilchrist in second row, an area that we're struggling a little bit. This game is, like, every pundit bar Vincent Hogan in the paper has predicted an Ireland win, but I'm telling you, this is going to be a really, really tough one.
No, it will. And I think this is, well, particularly with the much depleted team that we have and a lot of the frontliners not there, as you're saying, particularly in the second row, a place where we had an embarrassment of riches only a couple of months ago, and now we're you know, for short on players, you could almost say. But to me, it's just a game where the team just have to roll up their sleeves and get on with it. They're not going to have the strength in the line-out that they probably used to. They're going to find a couple of strange partnerships, just players back in. You know, I just think it's a time to just knuckle down and just show what a good squad of players that these guys are. I think it's going to be very hard. I don't think Scotland were pushed or showed anything against Italy, really, that worth talking about. It's really on the previous games that you know that they're a very, very dangerous side. Brokenfield running, it won't be as physical or abrasive as England, but they will try to get stuck into Ireland, because everybody has shown, like, even if, you know, it happened with Leinster as well, it seems that Irish sides, if you attack them earlier on, that they are struggling a little bit. So that is what they will try to do. But, you know, once the game breaks up, you know, Hogg at fullback is probably the best broken field runner in world rugby at the moment. And they love attacking from any point. So if there's any deficiencies in the Irish defence at any point, they will find it.
Yeah. I mean, the one area I'm very excited about is the back row. I mean, there's big changes in there. I love seeing Jack Conan in there at number 8. I think he's a phenomenal player. I think he's more of the traditional 8 that you would be used to and that we'd want in there. And then with Shawnee starting as well, it gives us that extra little bit of physicality. O'Mahony was poor last week. I think he was carrying that knock. But I expect him to have a big game to make up for the performance last week. So that back row is highly exciting.
Oh, there's no doubt. And very, very harsh, it has to be mentioned, on Van de Fleer, who literally was one, along with Ringrose, were probably one of the two players that could put their hands up and actually played reasonably well against England. I think you're dead right. I think you could have seen more changes if the likes of Toner wasn't injured. O'Mahony might have been left out of this game, and O'Brien put a 6.
Yeah.
You know, there could have been other changes because, you know, as I say, Van de Fleer had done excellently. But
it is really, really good. It also, I suppose, gives an indication, particularly with the centre partnerships that we have, that you would expect this to be a much more direct game plan from Ireland. There's a lot of physicality there. Sean O'Brien, when he came on in the last 20-odd minutes in that England game, looked like he was getting back to where he was. He was taking the ball on it. He looked like the only forward who was going to give us a bit of go-forward ball. And add to that, with the new centre partnership, you know, much more beef there. I would expect that to, you know, get us go-forward ball. And once we get that go-forward ball, you know, this is still the second seed team in the world. You know, we still have played fantastic rugby, and I can't imagine that that's just going to disappear and slip away.
Do you think, are we missing maybe a little bit of creativity in that centre partnership with Aki and Farrell? I mean, they're very, very solid players, but I think Ringrose and Henshaw, they just have that bit more skill levels. And we seem to struggle against England to create moves and opportunities.
Yeah, well, look, I didn't agree with the Henshaw experiment at fullback. I would always have Henshaw and Ringrose together. I think they're the best centre partnership that we have. But look, Farrell is an excellent player. He's had totally, if you remember the last couple of times he had the Irish jersey on before his injury woe started, he actually played really, really well and, was very impressive there. Creativity, look, Ringrose, we know, is the player for that. I would expect the game plan probably to be not as creative as it would be if we had all guns blazing with everybody there. But I don't think Farrell is going to let Anton down. I don't think we lack enough that it would change the result of the game.
Okay, looking at our opponents last week, getting a great victory under their belt, surprised quite a lot of people. They've got France, obviously, on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Twickenham in what is going to be an absolute cracker of a match. England look good this year. They look like serious title contenders.
They do. It all depends. You know that we're waiting on to see the reaction from Ireland, and you'll be able to tell that within the first couple of minutes, again with England. If England can remotely find the aggression and the passion and the way they played against Ireland, if they can maintain that throughout the Six Nations, you know, they will be title holders. There's title contenders, should I say, at least. Yeah. No doubt about that. They have everything. They have their big, beefy men back the way they like it. It's just, can they maintain that intensity? And the one thing that's the unknown with this game is what France is going to turn up. Like, we're always saying that over the years, but it's even now divided down to, is it the France from the first half of the Welsh game or the second half? In the first half, they were sublime. They were absolutely fantastic. They played wonderful rugby. They were attacking from all positions and getting over the try line almost at will against Wales. And then they just went to sleep. And, you know, it depends what France turns up against England.
Yeah, well, you know, they did blow it, there's no doubt about it, with the French. Yep. But the Welsh, as so often they do, got themselves out of trouble and now will be relishing the opportunity against Italy to push on a bit further. I have to say, I think this is the tightest championship we're going to have for many years. I mean, Wales have a real chance of winning it. You can't write Scotland off. We're struggling now, and you got England. But this Welsh side, they're another one that could easily take this title down.
No doubt about it. They are, like, Warren Gatland loves to put the French win down to the winning habit, which is an absolute load of balls. Yeah. But that's just worrying. He got out of jail with that France hand. But the one thing that he is right about is that they do like momentum. When Wales get momentum going, they're a very, very hard team to beat. And remember, we have them in the last game away from home, over in Cardiff, which will be hard. And the one thing I'd like to point out with this is that maybe, just maybe, Warren has gone a little bit too far. Now, I mean this only tiny bit, is that he's made 10 changes to this team heading over to Italy. And Italy are probably a little bit stronger than they were against Scotland with a couple of changes. And, you know, would there be a chance that Italy could maybe get stuck into a team? There's good experience on the bench. Get stuck into a team that haven't been used to playing together, because they really do have a very, very inexperienced team going out. But look,
Italy have shown so little in the last while, it's highly doubtful. But look, I will certainly have my fingers crossed for that one.
Yeah, that'll be a good one, all right. Just to finish up, Shane, news coming out this week about the Tullow tank, Sean O'Brien,
yeah.
Moving over to Declan Kidney to London Irish is on the cards. Big money being talked about, 400 grand a year. Nobody could blame him if he's to go over there, because I can't see a lucrative RFU contract coming.
No, but I think that has already come out that the RFU aren't going to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a shame, you know, listen, victims of it ourselves, but, you know, the RFU still have the opinion when you hit a certain age that they will not give you any security in contracts. And that's the problem, is that, you know, players, you know, even if they are, you know, 31, 32, they still want to have a bit of security and know what's doing for a couple of years, not just one. And it just looks like that's what's happened.
Shane, what sort of message does that send out, do you think? From a player's point of view, you look at Zeebo going to France for the big money in racing, and Madigan, let's say, going to Bristol, and other players like Shawnee now maybe possibly going to London Irish. I mean, if it is a case of, look, you know, the RFU are sticking to the business model and they're not going to pay players when it comes to an end, are we going to see more of this? Are we going to see players acting with their business heads as opposed to the loyalty to the green?
When it reaches the older guys, yes, we are going to see that.
That's a worry.
Yeah, I don't think it'll ever stop.
But that's really a worry, though, if we're looking at...
Oh, no, absolutely. I don't agree with this. Sure, look, as I know, you know, that's exactly what happened to myself. And, you know, that's when you hit that age, unfortunately, the way the RFU treats you in contract is just changes.
Yeah.
And there's not a single thing you can do about it.
But the worry is, Shane, though, you know, if they maintain this policy, which they seem to be doing, of not selecting players who go overseas, very quickly, our national team could start to get depleted. I mean, you look at Sean O'Brien has to...
I don't think it'll get to that stage, right? Because there's two things. We are producing an awful lot of talent below, you know what I mean? There is that. And, you know, I don't think that it'll affect the international side, you know, to any great degree. Like, you know, there is very few Johnny Sextons who can go away and still get picked all the time because they do follow that policy.
I don't think they'll be able to do that again. I think it's been, they've been, you know, criticised so much for that they won't be able to do that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, it would be highly unusual. But I can't imagine any of the superstars who are in the making at the moment leaving within the next while. I think this just is an issue for the elder lemon in the Irish squad, you know, because I was very surprised when I heard it, you know, I but it is coming directly from the RFU saying they will not give a 2 or 3 year contract, and that's what it's about. And then it becomes, as you know, it then becomes not so much about the money, it just becomes about security.
Well,
to know what you're doing for a little while.
Yeah, it is kind of understandable from an RFU point of view, because he has been so injury prone. It's hard to offer him a 3 year deal on big money, because, you know, unfortunately his record.
There's also the thing is that London Irish is becoming more Irish again, maybe.
Yeah.
Declan Kidney's over there. Mick Crossan is the owner of it, who's massive Irish roots.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe the relationship between London Irish and Ireland could grow again, you know, because it was, as you know, it was essentially the fifth province for, you know, quite a long time, and maybe there is a chance there of seeding a few more players into there who can't quite get the foothold in the provinces.
Yeah. Okay, Shane, thanks very much for taking the call. Rest those weary bones now for next time, won't you? Because the golf season is upon us, you know what I mean?
Yeah, now more
you
important.
Being one of the biggest bandits in Ireland at golf as well, you know what I mean? So
speaking to the understudy, yeah.
Anyway, listen, always a pleasure listening to you, always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for your time. Enjoy the game today, and hopefully Ireland can bounce back very, very quickly.
Yeah, please God.
Please God.
All right, guys, take care.
That's the great Shane Bourne there talking rugby. We're going to take a quick break. Declan Drake is going to be with us. And, of course, Alan Cawley as well with all the soccer news.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
It would be appropriate if his 100th putt this week dropped a birdie.
What a finish to McIlroy!
is one very tough lady from Italy. Been 10 rounds a couple of times. Can't cope with Katie Taylor.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. Ken has just shot off to the airport as he makes his way over to Cardiff for snooker later on. So I'll finish out the show from here. You can still get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. We'd love to hear from you. Still to come, Alan Cawley will be talking football with us up towards the end of the show, just after the break. But now, I'm delighted to say, joined in studio by our own Declan Drake. Good morning, Declan.
Hello, Reg. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Doing very well indeed. Plenty to talk about on the GAA front this week, obviously. We'll start with the hurling and, of course, a good win over Offaly last week. Before I come to you on it, let's have a listen with what you caught up with Matty Kenny, what he was talking about.
You anticipated a tough enough contest from Offaly. You got it from long periods, but you showed your class in the end.
Yeah, look at that's Offaly played well today. The push up to us, we knew there was going to be a reaction from last week's defeat. So you know, they're a proud hurling county down here, and come down to their home ground, we knew it was going to be tough. And in fairness, that they put up to us, that we got some nice scores in the forwards that stretched out the scoreboard a bit. And you know, it gives us, you know, I suppose the scoreboard looked a little bit more comfortable than it maybe was on the pitch.
See the pieces of the team falling in, of the jigsaw falling into place a little bit more now. Danny Sutcliffe started today. You have David Tracy back today as well, which is a real positive for you.
Yeah, look at Danny came on the last day, and you know, it's his first game to play for this term, and I thought he did really well against Carroll. He came on and he brought that form in today's game, and got a full 70 minutes into him today, which is very, very positive. And I thought he put in a huge shift out there today. And it was great, you know, to get Keane O'Callaghan and David Tracy game time into them as well. You know, that's what we're trying to do, is get as much game time into to the bigger squad, and have a competition for places as we go on during the year.
And a man who has made an impression when he's come off the bench in his last couple of games has been Ushan O'Rourke, and he really grasped the opportunity he was presented with today. I think today,
yeah, it's a good. You know, we made five changes from the team the last day, and you know, we're very happy with the last players the last day. But we just rotated the team a bit today and brought in five different guys, and Ushan was one of them guys. So he's been going very well in training. We played Ballyhale last Sunday morning, and he was very impressive in that. So he was going well in training, and he deserved his chance today, and he did really, really well. And another guy that came on the last day, Donald Burke, came on the second half last day, and you know, Donald played really well the last day when he came on against Carlow, and I think he could have shot 5 or 6 points there today as well. So there was two really good contributions by them guys in the scoring end.
Yeah, well, great stuff there from Matty, obviously talking about Ushan O'Rourke. 2 goals from him, Declan. Very, very solid performance, and solid performance all around. Dublin in control right the way through this game.
Yeah, pretty much, Reg. Ushan is an impressive lad from Kilmacud Crokes. We've mentioned him a few times on the programme since the World Cup campaign commenced before Christmas, because he comes off the bench and always clips over a couple of points. As Matty said in the piece there, he got his chance in a challenge game against Ballyhale last Sunday morning, which would have been fairly competitive, because Ballyhale is, I think you mentioned earlier, in an All-Ireland Club semi-final this afternoon, so their players were playing for places on their team, and obviously the Dublin lads were the same. Ushan got the chance, and he took it with both hands. Delighted for him, 2 goals and 3. Mentioned Donald Burke there as well. The Nafina man is growing more and more into inter-county senior hurling, got 6 points. Real positives. Danny Sutcliffe, 70 minutes under the belt. Very, very welcome to see that. Very welcome as well to see David Tracy back in the fold. Now, the only downside to last week was the knee injuries sustained by Liam Rush. Not sure how serious or whatever that might be just yet, or whether he might be available for the trip to Galway next week. But so far, so good. The pieces of the jigsaw are falling into place. But, you know, we have Galway next week and then Waterford the following week, so the 2 tough games to come.
That's for sure. Galway is certainly going to be a tricky one. But all positive so far, apart from that injury, looking well and a great performance. The footballers, indeed, they carried on with a good one as well, keeping the winning ways going for Dublin, 115 to 7 points over Galway. A good, solid, convincing victory over against a decent Galway team. You caught up with Jim Gavin, so let's have a listen to that.
Yeah, it was very close in the first half, and I thought it was a great response by our guys at halftime. I think we just kept that intensity levels up. There was some great defending in the first half. It really was nip and tuck, and each attack, you know, both teams had the potential to score. They missed the goal chance. We had a couple of point chances on the far end and maybe had to some shots, which would be a little unlike us. But we just tied it up in the second half and some great movement, and the guys kept that level up. And again, some great defending, some great team play, and some great team scores. So this time of the season, we're just 3 weeks back today, in some ways we're just getting into the season, pre-season if you will, and to get 2 points on the board and to get the result is, obviously is important. It gives us a little bit of solidity in the league. But we take each game in isolation, and disappointed last week that we didn't get anything out of in terms of on the scoreboard. But certainly it benefits a player if he's getting a good run of games in the league to take a claim for the championship spot. But that's the form that we'd know from Cormac. First and foremost, he's a great team player, and there's an awful lot of work off the ball for the team. So to see Cormac getting those scores today isn't a surprise. But a lot of hard work goes into the build-up play, and he's just—it's great to have a player his quality to finish the move. Oh yeah, whether we play Kerry and Killarney or Tralee, they're always—they're great games. They're a quality side, and obviously they have had a new change of management team who are coming in now with multiple All-Irelands at the minor level. And the players that they seem to have introduced, looking at the team sheet last week, it's they're players that are recognised who have multiple All-Ireland titles. It's a very it's a team that's used to winning. They've obviously as from Kerry, they have great ambitions for this team, and as I said, it's a team of young stars, and it has the makings of a great game. So that'll be our fourth week back. And again, as our pre-season work, just really looking forward to a really great game down in Tralee. And again, I know there's a lot of Dublin supporters telling me they're looking forward to travelling up to Kerry, so has the makings of a great night.
Yeah, we'll get to Kerry in a second, but Jim used that Galway match to blood a few some of the younger players.
Yeah, 3 players in particular. Well, we know about Ryan Baskell, but Liam Flatman and Sean Buckler have been handed opportunities as well, which they've taken with both hands, Reg, and the team, which was released last night for this evening's trip to Kerry, shows the 3 of them included in it as well. He spoke there in the piece about Cormac Costello. I was in 2016 in the All-Ireland final replay. He came off the bench to tremendous effect to win the game for Dublin.
Yeah.
He's been unlucky since with a stream of injuries. And, over the last couple of months, thankfully, he has been injury-free. He's been given an opportunity in the team again. He scored 6 points from play last Saturday evening against Galway in a very strong second-half performance by the team overall. So it's very positive for Cormac. Hopefully he can stay injury-free and can make a serious claim for a starting place in the team over the next few weeks. But certainly those 3 players, Flatman, Bugler and Baskell, it shows the level that they're at, the performance level that they've been at with their clubs, and some of them involved in the O'Byrne Cup campaign earlier on last month, that they are very much in contention, which is what you want as a manager.
Yeah, well, on to tonight, of course, the 2 most successful counties in GAA history. It'll be sold out at Austin Stark Park tonight in Tralee. It's going to be a cracking match. These two, whenever they get together, it's always quite incredible. Of course, Kerry, new manager with Peter Keane. They've beaten Tyrone and Cavan. Dublin did lose to Monaghan, I suppose. That was the only blip, but they're back on track, beating Galway. Teams announced for tonight. It's going to be a cracker.
Oh, absolutely. It always is when you play Kerry, as Jim said there, whether it's in Killarney or under the lights in Tralee. I always think it's most special to play under the lights. It's a phenomenon that's taken off in the GAA over the last number of years. But yeah, it's going to be a very interesting game. As you say, Kerry have 2 wins from 2. Which is great for their confidence going forward, but tonight is a serious test for them and the All-Ireland champions come to town. Not only is Austin Stax Park in Tralee sold out tonight, but I believe you can't get accommodation within 20-25 miles of Tralee tonight, which is great for the local economy down there. But really looking forward to Dublin going down, seeing how they perform. As you mentioned, they did lose to Monaghan, but let's not forget that they were just back from holidays.
Yeah.
They've had a couple of weeks' work since, had the victory over Galway last week. So confidence amongst the group will be fairly high going down there this evening.
Yeah, it should be a cracker. Look forward to seeing how that one goes and catching up on that next week. Of course, the ladies are taking on Tipperary as well, and they've announced their team. Any surprises in it?
Yeah, well, first of all, they played in Croke Park last Saturday evening in the opening round of the Lidl National Football League, and they were beaten by Donegal by 4 points, 111 to 17. Now, Mick Bowen took the opportunity to give five players their senior debuts in a Dublin jersey, whereas Donegal were pretty much at full strength and thoroughly deserved their victory, you'd have to say. Karen Guthrie with a fine goal after 5 minutes. It was the introduction of two All-Stars from last year, Lauren McGee of Kilmacud Crokes, and Lindsay Davey, of course, a friend of the show here, from Skerry's Harps, two All-Stars, as I say, who came on in the second half. Lindsay got a fine goal, and try as Dublin did, they just couldn't breach the gap. So those two players are back in the starting 15 for tomorrow's trip to Ardfin and throw in there at 2 o'clock. But again, like the men, Mick Bowen has taken the opportunity to introduce these new players, to give them their feet, to see if they're up to the level of inter-county football at this standard.
You can still text us here on the show if you have any questions you want to put to us for the football section on 087 11 55 777. And it is time for football. And delighted to say we're joined on the line by Alan Cawley, as always. Good morning, Alan, from the side
morning,
of the
Reggie.
Pitch.
The side of the pitch, Reggie. Yeah, we're back. Football season kicks off again for the Nippers.
Absolutely. I'm going to a game myself at brilliant. 1:45. I'm looking forward to it. Just
although
perfect
the cold
timing.
One today, Reggie. It's freezing.
Oh, I know. This morning coming in, you could really feel that wind will cut you in two. And I'm sure down in Turner's Cross tonight, the wind will cut you in two too, because that's where the President's Cup is on. And for the fourth year running, we see Dundalk taking on Cork City. What do you think? Home advantage?
The rivalry is back again, Reggie. Yeah, and obviously the last 4 years, as you say, they've been going toe-to-toe. So the President's Cup kicks it all off. Now, last year, there was a great game, actually. It's a pity it's not on telly, or there hasn't been much promotion about it, to be honest. I've been a bit disappointed with that, with the season kicking off next week. And obviously, this is the curtain raiser, and there hasn't been much talk at all. But it is in Turner's Cross, 5:30 this evening. And I think Dundalk are very, very strong. Again, the big thing with them last year, obviously, was winning the league and the cup. But the big plus, and what makes it ominous for the rest, is that they held on to all their top players. Whereas if you look over the last 3 or 4 years, when they were winning things, they nearly always lost their, maybe their best player or their two best players. Whereas this year, they've kept Hoban, they've kept Duffy, Shields, Benson, and the like, and they've added to the squad as well. So it'll be Dundalk to beat again this year. And Cork, I don't think, are as strong either with their recruitment. So you would fancy Dundalk, not just today, but over the course of the season again this year, Reggie.
Yeah, those Cork lads, though, they tend to be fairly stubborn when they're down at home.
Yeah, and there'll be a big crowd, and obviously, it's the opening night, so you would expect a huge crowd, as you normally get in Turner's Cross, to be fair to them. But I just think with them losing Sadlier and Jimmy Cuhan, they've lost a couple of players, Damien Delaney, and I don't think their recruitment has been good, bringing in the level of player that they've lost. So I would actually expect, I'm thinking Cork might even drop out of the top two for the first time in 3 or 4 years, which gives an opportunity to likes of Shamrock Rovers, St. Pat's, because St. Pat's have recruited really, really well in the off-season. Harry Kenny has brought in some really good players, and they have a strong-looking squad. Rovers as well, I'm expecting a big challenge for them, and they have to challenge. Like, Stephen Bradley is there 2.5 years now. They were 25 points behind last year, 22 the year before, I think it was. So they have to challenge. They really do, Reggie.
Okay.
Yeah, morning, Al. Declan here. You're right on Rovers. They certainly do have to challenge, but I think challenge more consistently. I think that's the key for them, because they tend to start reasonably well, then hit a dip just around the summertime, and always catch up towards the end. So I asked the question on social media during the week, who was going to split Dundalk and Cork City? Or more importantly, who had the potential to finish ahead of them? Rovers are always in that category if they have the consistency. St. Patrick's Athletic, as you mentioned, have made some great signings. I think Chris Forrester coming back to Pats is brilliant for them. It's also brilliant for the league. And hopefully they can push on. Where else would you see a potential challenge coming from to the big two, Al?
I don't see it anywhere else, to be honest. Like, only from Shamrock Rovers and St. Pat's. I think Waterford have lost a couple of key players as well, and they kind of were punching above their weight a little bit last year. Alan Reynolds done a brilliant job to get them in fourth, considering it was their first year back. So they'll do well just to sustain that. And if anyone's going to break into the top two, I can only see it coming from Shamrock Rovers. And the one thing I'm a little bit disappointed with them, they've signed very well in midfield areas. Obviously, Jack Byrne and Aaron McAniff, but they already have some really good quality in midfield. But they haven't signed a centre forward as of yet. And I still think they need a 20 goal a season, man. Dan Carr will chip in, all right, but I don't think he's going to get you 20 goals. And I think if they're going to overtake a Dundalk or a Cork, they need that. But they do have a big season ahead of them. Obviously, Stephen Bradley, it's a huge season ahead for him. And they have to give themselves a chance. Like you spoke there about consistency. The last 2 years, they've been out of it before the season has even started. So it's no good going on a run in the end if you're not even giving yourself a chance. So, and I think Harry Kenny is going to deliver a big season for Pats as well. He signed really, really well on top of Forrester. You have Reese McCabe coming in. Drennan's a massive signing as well. And there's a fella who maybe Shamrock Rovers should have maybe looked at, Drennan, because in pre-season he's been electric for Pat, scored a lot of goals for Sligo towards the end of last year. So it could be a big season for Mikey Drennan as well.
What about the change in the dugout at Oriel Park? Stephen Kenny, of course, having gone to the Irish under 21 job and ultimately the senior job. How is that going to affect things there with Vinnie Perrott and John Gill now, amongst others, in charge?
I think, Declan, yeah, it's a good point. I think that's what's going to be the most interesting thing about the season. And I think it's a good appointment with Vinnie going in, obviously, the continuity, because he's been there with Stephen throughout the whole successful years over the last four or five since day one, really. So the continuity of bringing Vinny in, I think, is a really good thing. And as I said, they've a ready assembled squad, but it's a different dynamic, and Stephen Kenny's been the driving force, as we all know, behind that success for the last four or five years. And obviously Vinny deserves credit too, but I just think it's a different voice, a different dynamic. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, Declan. And that's another reason why I think it might be a bit more competitive, the league this year. I can't see Dundalk running away with it by 20 points or being miles ahead of the rest. I do think they should win it and they'll be favourites, but I think it might be a lot more competitive and closer this year.
Yeah, well, across the water, of course, it is very competitive and it couldn't get any closer. Liverpool, of course, have a chance to extend their lead today. They're at home to Bournemouth. But they still have some tricky ones left, with United away, Spurs to play, Chelsea at home. There's a few banana skins in there, and of course, City hot on their tails with also having United to play, and with United's form at the moment. A Liverpool pressure talk is just nonsense, is the headline in the Daily Star. Klopp is saying he's defiant and saying there's no problem. What are your thoughts?
I think we can all see, Reggie, it's far from nonsense. Yeah. The last two games, they are looking a bit nervy. Now, in fairness to them, they've had injuries as well. Leicester City game wouldn't concern me as much in terms of performance, because I think you have to give Leicester credit. They were terrific. That was more, I felt, the anxiety in the crowd more so than actually on the pitch, and you could feel that seeping onto the pitch, especially as Leicester were kind of more in control. But the one that would worry me was West Ham the other night. I felt they were really poor, and especially after going a goal up, they did look very, very nervy. Obviously, they were missing Henderson, Wijnaldum, and Alexander-Arnold is injured, and Joe Gomez. So the squad has been stretched, and they don't have the quality that Man City have. I don't think anyone has the quality that Man City have, to be fair. So I think they are looking a bit nervy, but they've a good fixture today to get them back on track. And I think that's all they should be concerned about right now, is just the next game, which is today, and then worry about what's to come down the tracks. But I think Bournemouth's away form has been very, very poor all season. So I do think they'll get back on track and get a win today. And they're still in there pitching and fighting, Reggie, and they've been great all year. People need to remember, like, they've only lost one game all year, regardless of the last two results. So they're still in there fighting with a great chance.
Yeah, but Al, Crystal Palace went to Anfield and scored three goals recently, which would give Bournemouth some hope today. I mean, I think the biggest factor here could be experience of a title charge. Manchester City's players have that. I mean, the vast majority of them have it. Can't say the same for Liverpool. How important a factor is that going to be, do you think, over the next two or three months?
Yeah, it's a very big factor, Declan. I would consider experience being huge in a title race. And obviously the fact as well, on top of that, what they don't have with City, they haven't won it in 29 years. So not only do they have the inexperience on the pitch, but there's the weight of the whole city and everyone and the pressure that's on them. And you can sense that nervousness, as I said, amongst the crowd more so than even on the pitch. And that does seep onto the pitch. So, as I say, it's all about probably just refocusing the mind and getting the victory today and getting back on track. And it might, like, we might look back on this in a few weeks and say it could have been a bit of a blessing in disguise that it hasn't come toward, with two or three games to go and all is lost then. Like, there's still loads to play for. And if this is their little blip and they can get back on track today, Klopp might be glad of it, because every team, Declan, goes through a blip at some point as well, you know.
Yeah. And Manchester United, of course, have such a key part to play in this, don't they? Because they have to play Liverpool and they have to play Man City as well.
And especially the form that they're in at the moment, Declan, like, Solskjaer has been absolutely amazing. And I wouldn't rule Spurs out. I think people have been very disrespectful towards Spurs. They're only 5 points behind, and they've picked up the wins the last couple of weeks, obviously, without Dele Alli and Kane as well. So, and they still have to go to the Etihad too. So Spurs have a big say in this too. I wouldn't be ruling them out just yet.
Yeah, well, Spurs certainly have a couple of tough ones in there, though, with Chelsea away and, as you said, City away and Liverpool away. They, of them all, three teams, have the worst run in, though.
But their away form is, they've 11 wins out of 13, Reggie. They're nearly better off playing away. Now, I agree with you totally. They're three of the toughest fixtures you'll ever get. But they're still in there fighting and pitching. Pochettino deserves some amount of credit, because considering, like, they haven't spent a penny, the squad there has been stretched with injuries, your two best players gone, and they're still there or thereabouts. Like, it's brilliant.
Yeah, super. Ole doing the job, still keeping it going, can extend it to 11 runs. Games undefeated today very quickly. It's 2 points off the top four. Can the unthinkable happen? Can United be back in the top four?
Oh, absolutely, Reggie. They're bang on track for it now, and he's done an amazing job since he's got in. And when you think where they were, how far they were out of the top four when he took over, and you look at them now on the coattails of the others, and they will win today against Fulham as well.
You think so too, Declan? You think United will get their top four?
I think they're very much capable of it. One thing I just want to mention, I want to congratulate our old friend, and Alan will know him well too, is Patrick Ammond. Wonderful goal for Newport County in the Cup during the week. And Manchester City coming to Wales as well. What a career Paul just had. And 18 goals. I mean, you got to start looking at him.
Quite incredible, Alan.
Unbelievable, yeah. And he's a great lad as well, as Declan said. So good luck to him. He's having an unbelievable time of it at the moment. And what a great goal as well, Reggie, during the week. Brilliant.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, well, Alan, as always, I'll let you get back to the sideline there. You're up to your eyes. I can hear the frozen wrap-up. Keep warm and don't let it get to you too much. And we'll chat to you again next week.
Thanks, lad.
That's great. Alan Cawley there, of course, coming live from the sideline, giving us his thoughts on the games this weekend and, of course, the chances and Liverpool's chances and whether or not they've peaked too early or have they let it slip, but hopefully not. And as always, that's all we've got time for this morning on Dublin's Talking Sport. Big thanks to all our guests and contributors and Declan Drake for coming into studio. Don't forget, we'll be podcasting this so you can catch up on it. Producer of the show was Paul Morris and Ashley Lynch. Thanks for listening and come on, Ireland.
Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
It would be appropriate if his 100th putt this week dropped a birdie.
What a finish for McIlroy.
And Gentili goes down, and this is one very tough lady from Italy. Been 10 rounds a couple of times.